So again, good morning, everyone. What I want to talk with you about or share with you this morning is something I've been wanting to do for a while. You know, we always, we don't have a lot of ritual and chanting in our community, but we do have a little bit. And so we hear morning chants, evening chants, we hear chants or verses before our bell is invited, before a Dharma talk. And oftentimes it is kind of our habit. We only hear the words, but we don't attend to meaning. And words without meaning lack any depth. And in the Dharma hall, or well, especially in the Dharma hall, the words have meaning. They're trying to wake us up. And so I want to talk to them a little bit just to give a sense of how we could be attending to these chants that, again, we can just hear. Hear the words, but not really be affected by them. And unfortunately, I think this is the way many of us live our life. We sort of are on automatic pilot, seeing things or hearing things or reading things, but we don't let them sink in. We don't stop to reflect, you know, what is the meaning of this word? You know, we are good in our country. We are good page turners. We know how to start a book and we know how to finish a book and how to read it all the way through. But oftentimes we don't really know how to really chew on something, reflect on something. So it gets inside us. And so what I want to share with you is sort of just some ways of looking at or listening to these. So in the morning, before we begin, who's ever in the hall reads the, and these are gathas from the Plum Village Thich Nhat Hanh tradition. And I'm reading from the Chanting from the Heart, Buddhist Ceremonies and Daily Practices from the Plum Village tradition, which is what we follow. So there's a verse for entering the meditation hall, a gatha verse. And it reads, entering the meditation hall, I see my true self. As I sit down, I vow to cut off all disturbances. Quite something. So this is really when we enter the meditation hall or when we're at home, wherever we are, and we enter or begin, take the posture of, you know, to begin our meditation period. Entering the meditation hall, I see my true self. Very profound, you see. Because the interesting thing, of course, is whether it's, and again, I don't know what this is a translation of. Most of us, we're always seeing, we might say, our false self, our ego self, our separate self, our self that's full of needs and wants and desires and has lots of issues, right? And though that's the self that most of us see. And most of this, when we see others, that's the way we see others. So we very rarely really see our true self. But it's saying, oh, we're entering the meditation hall, something special, you see? We're not entering, other places that we enter. Or when we're doing meditation, we're not doing kind of other things. This is special. And I think that's why there's a gata or a verse to kind of remind us. I'm entering the meditation hall so I can see. See is just a word for like touch, experience, my true self, who and what I really am. And of course, to see or touch who and what I really am, I have to be willing to let go of my identification with my false self, my little self, my petty self. Everybody know what I'm talking about, that self, the self of drama, the self that always has got some issue, the self of dissatisfaction, right? So that's not our true self, but we've always identified with that. We continue to identify it. But when we come into the meditation hall, we say, I'm here to see my true self, which means I have to be willing to let go of my false self. Now, how does my false self manifest itself in the meditation hall? In thoughts, right? Okay. So that is why this willingness in meditation to remove one's attention. Do they want to come in? Okay, just give me the signal. Just parenthetically, many remember a month or two ago, we had a transmission of the 5 mindfulness trainings and the 14 mindfulness trainings here in the Dharma Hall, and obviously on Zoom for most people. And we had 7 members who were ordained into the Order of Interbeing. They had gone through their apprenticeship, their aspirancy, and we ordained them here. But we mentioned them that there's also a kind of formal transmission of the 14 that's done through Plum Village. And so this morning by Zoom, there was a transmission of the 14. And of course, you know, those members who were receiving it, you know, they had to send an application and, you know, various things. So they were invited to receive the Plum Village ordination. And so they are joining us. They must be done. And so they're going to be joining us in a minute. And then at the end, we will actually present them in front of the community with their brown jackets. So let's just take a minute as they come in the hall. Welcome, everyone. So, entering the meditation hall, I see my true self. So again, just to say it again, to see my true self means I have to stop. I'm setting my intention of what I'm going to do here. I'm coming in the meditation hall. What's it really about? It's about seeing my true self, which means stop identifying with my false self. This is the intention, you see. This is the energy. And again, we have to really have come to the conclusion that my identification with my false self, my ego self, my I, me, myself, myself of that always wants and needs and again has endless dramas, you know, that I'm not here to ruminate on that and obsess about that. Okay. I'm here to see my true self. And then the next verse says, as I sit down, I vow to cut off all disturbances. Right? So this is an intention that we're making to ourselves or to our ancestors, to the Buddha, whoever whoever, you know, to the sacredness of this space. As I sit down, I vow to cut off all disturbances. So a vow to cut off all disturbances is a vow or to whatever my meditation period is, but also it's a sort of a life vow. And we have to ask yourself, what are all the things that disturb me? Disturb my mind, agitate my mind, cause the winds of emotionality to move through my mind. I vow to cut them off. Now, obviously, we vow to cut them off in our life, but this is especially true in our meditation. So a vow to cut it off, how do we cut it off? We use our meditation practice, right? We use our concentration on whatever our meditation object is. Again, breath, counting, labeling, just experiencing the breath, being one with the body, being one with the mind, looking into the mind, or whatever other practice, doing the four immeasurables, or whatever you're doing. When you're doing that wholeheartedly, you have cut off disturbances because you are placing the mind on something that's not disturbing. I mean, in Buddhist psychology, what's considered wholesome and unwholesome really have to do with what was created by meditators. Mind states that support stability and calmness and openness of mind, these are wholesome. Mind states that disturb the mind with emotionality, with agitation, these are considered unwholesome. So, I often say when I'm giving meditations instructions, I remind the meditators, we're here to meditate, not ruminate, right? And why do we have to remember? Because if we're not attentive, if we're not mindful of what's going on in our mind, the energy of rumination, the energy of thinking, because again, we have to remember we are lay people. And in this, what this means, we don't live in a cave, we don't live in a structured monastic environment, right? We live in the world, which means when we come to meditation, our mind has been usually somewhat active in our work and whatever. Now, obviously, the more we are mindful in our daily life, and the more we are calming and stabilizing, the mind we bring to meditation will be less agitated. Right, but still, it's very hard these days to come to meditation with a pure mind. So, I vow to cut them off. Cut them off means what? It means when they arise, I cut them off by not attending to them, not following them. That's how I cut them off. I let them be. You see, I let them be. I let them fly by. I let the balloon fly by. I don't need to grab it. Right? That's my cutting. But sometimes we have to, if that's not working, right? If that's just kind of being able just to let the thoughts and the dramas just fly by as we pay our attention to whatever our meditation practice is. Sometimes we have to kind of be a little more deliberate, right? Right. We have to really cut it off. Right? We have to be a little more forceful in our letting go, right? In the same way, if I'm holding something very loosely, to drop it, I'm not going to drop it. To drop it doesn't take much effort. Right, because I'm holding things very loosely. Right, so I'm not, letting go is not a big deal. But many of us, we're more tightly wound, and we're more tightly wound or around certain kinds of thoughts. Everybody has their own favorites, and if you spend enough time watching your mind, you'll see your top 40. so to speak, of the things you like to listen to over and over again, you know. So again, you know, it's like thinking of my grandchildren, you know, it's not easy to get them to turn off their cartoons. Even though it's time, it's like they always go, one more, can I just listen to one more? You know what I mean? They're not at ease, right? They're very attached and they want it to continue, right? And I think many of us, we are very attached to our dramas of our mind, our thoughts, our opinions, you know, the whole deal. And so we just love to listen to them, even if they're painful. So again, if we're not tightly wound, we can, and it's very easy to let them go, then that's good. But if we are more tightly wound, then we have to, you know, it takes a little, you know, if I'm really holding tightly, I got to put a little more energy into letting go. The object is to let go, but I have to be a little more forceful in my letting go because I can feel the energy that wants to hold on. Yeah, so that was like 15, 20 minutes talking about one little gatha. And I could really go on and on, but I don't want to. I just want to give you a sense that these have meaning. Okay. Now, in our community, in the morning, we do two different versions of inviting the bell. One of them reads, "Body, speech, and mind held in perfect oneness. I send my heart along with the sound of the bell. May the hearers awaken from forgetfulness and transcend all anxiety and sorrow." So this is obviously written from the point of view of the one who's inviting the bell. Okay? This is what's in their heart. But those that are listening and listening to the bell and listening to the words can also do the same practice. So this is the instruction to the bell inviter: body, speech, and mind held in perfect oneness, right? So if I'm here, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, I don't want to make a mistake. I don't want to hit it too hard. I don't want to do this. I wonder what Fred's going to think about my bell ringing. That's not perfect oneness. Perfect oneness is, there's no a distinction. Body, speech, and mind are in perfect harmony. And this is really the way we would like to be, how we would like to live. With our body, means the actions, the physical actions of our body, the words of our mouth, and the our mind and its awareness have been brought together. You see, that's what we're doing in meditation, right? We are harmonizing body, speech, and mind. If you think about, let's say, mindfulness of the breath, right? Breath is body, right? Speech is quiet, we're not talking. And our mind is fully absorbed in the breath. It's just breath, right? Just breathing. So that's, or even if you're counting or whatever, So it means we start with checking, am I in harmony? Have I brought all aspects of my body, speech, and mind together? Right? That's what we do in meditation when we say, you know, relax and come into your body. Be aware of your body, be present. Mind is mindful awareness. Body is the physical sensation, right? When mind is fully absorbed in body, there is oneness of body and mind. I mean, it's not so difficult to understand. So that's what we'd like to do. We get out of this duality stuff where we're always separate and thinking about and just feeling separate, right? We want to let go of the I, the me, the my, and just enter totally into experience. You know, this is what we do in the walking. This is what we do in the breathing. This is what we do in the eating. This is what we do in the brushing the teeth. This is what we do in the shower. This is what we do when we're talking with somebody, we're being with somebody, or listening to music. We want to disappear into it and have that experience of body, speech, and mind in perfect harmony, oneness. Now I send my heart along with the sound of the bell. Isn't that beautiful? You see, I mean, that's, so again, the person who's inviting the bell, that's what they're doing. But all of us, as we listen to the bell, I'm sending my heart. What does that mean? What is my heart? This is the heart of loving kindness. This is the heart of compassion. This is the heart that wants beings to be free of their suffering, right? This is what I'm sending. You know, I send my heart along with the sound of the bell. You see? It's like I'm attaching something. I'm not just inviting a bell, making a sound, you know, because, you know, traditionally in a meditation hall, bells serve, this is when we start meditation, three bells. One bell is when we end meditation, you know, small bell is when we stand up. So traditionally in a meditation hall, bells are serving a function, you know, they keep us moving in silence. But here we're saying, we're sending my heart. And then it says really what's in our heart. May the hearers awaken from forgetfulness and transcend all anxiety and sorrow. So again, in our Mahayana Buddhism, our Great Path Buddhism, this is sort of the essential. We are not practicing for ourselves. We are not practicing in isolation. Right? We're practicing for all beings. Right? So what is being said here, even though, you know, we're sitting here in the meditation hall and sending the bell, in my heart, I am sending the wish that everyone who hears this bell awakens from forgetfulness. What is this forgetfulness? See, this is a very important word in Buddhism. You know, it really characterizes our whole life. We forget who we are. And we forget who we truly are. Sort of like that entering the meditation hall verse. We forget what our true mind, our true self is, because we're so identified with this petty, narrow, constricted little self. Right? Because we have forgotten who we really are. In Buddhism, we say, essentially, we're Buddhas. We have an awakened nature. We have the potential, each one of us, to be noble beings in this life, right? To live in goodness and to be able to share goodness with everyone we encounter. That's who we really are. But we've forgotten it. Right? We don't remember it. Many of us, we don't remember it because no one ever pointed it out to us. It's not like we're at fault. It's just that nobody ever pointed it out to us. When we were growing up, nobody ever said, yeah, you're essentially a noble being. You have all the potential of goodness in you. You can be a Buddha, a Bodhisattva in this lifetime if you want. No, I mean, our parents, being who they were, they talked to us about what? Doing well in school, so you could have a good career, so you could get married, you know what I mean, and, you know, afford a house, right? That's what they told us. They didn't really tell us about our inherent nobility. So, whatever, we have forgotten it. Of course, we want to remember it. That's our practice. May the hearers awaken from forgetfulness and transcend all anxiety and sorrow. So when you see these things like anxiety and sorrow, those are just placeholders, right? Which means all afflictions, right? They can't give the whole list. So they say, they list a couple, right? All anxiety and sorrow. But again, those are big ones, right? Fear and sadness. Those are some of the major kind of afflictions. There are many others, but that's our wish. Really, our wish for ourselves, our wish for others. And you can see, we state it right at the beginning of a practice session. This is why we're here. We're here so we can wake up from our forgetfulness of who and what we really are, what we're really capable of. And it is our wish that everyone hearing this bell, you know, that they'll wake up, they'll remember, and they can live a life free of suffering. Is that clear? So that's, you know, so if we're in a hall like today with you know, there are 30 people in the hall, there are, I don't know how many people are on Zoom, Chris? 96, so altogether we have about 130 people or so. Yeah, this is our wish, that everyone, at least those of us who are together, you know, that all of us can wake up, all of us be free of suffering, free of affliction. Right. So that's that's what's being shared in one of the versions. The other version we often chant in the morning. And again, we'll see, they're kind of variations on a theme. And this one reads, may the sound of this bell penetrate deeply into the cosmos. In even the darkest places, may living beings hear it clearly, so their suffering will cease, and understanding arises in their hearts, and they can transcend the path of anxiety and sorrow. So this is just a variation, but can you hear how beautiful it is? You know, that before we jump into our meditation and that we go, oh, this is our hope, that the sound of this bell and these thoughts, these wishes, these intentions of my mind, right, can penetrate everywhere. Even the darkest places. Right? Bodhisattvas, they vow to go into the darkest places. We're not afraid. Right? Darkest places are places of great suffering, great ignorance. That's the kind of darkness. You know, some people are actually afraid of the physical darkness, you know, like being afraid of the dark. Kids are often afraid of the dark. Maybe some adults are still afraid of the dark. But bodhisattvas aren't afraid of the dark. Right? They know, you know, it's all the same. Whatever's there is there, whether it's dark or light. The only thing is I, you know, because I can't see it, I may have anxiety, worry, what's there. Whatever's there is there. So we want, even the darkest places, which is also talking about us, right? You see, it's also, in even the darkest places, is also my own darkest places. May I hear it clearly. So we wish it for everyone, but it's also, you know, oh, let the sound of this bell and these wishes, you know, penetrate my own dark places, places where there isn't light, openness, spaciousness, open-heartedness. These are my dark places, places where I'm wounded, you know, all those places. May this bell of awakening, this bell of compassion, may it clearly enter the darkest places. Why? So suffering ceases. This is what all the Dharma is about, the ending of suffering. And so that's what we wish for ourselves and all beings. Understanding arises in their hearts and they can transcend the paths of anxiety and sorrow. This is very profound. Because this is like core Dharma. Suffering ceases when there is understanding. Mindfulness and concentration are not enough. Right? We can be, you know, very ignorant, very deluded, and yet be very concentrated and mindful in how we go about leading our deluded, mindful life, you see. So again, we have to remember, especially in these days where, you know, mindfulness is kind of a standalone practice has entered our culture, that's in Buddhism, mindfulness and concentration are cultivated in the Buddhist path in order to develop wisdom and understanding. because it's only wisdom and understanding that is liberating. Right? It's like, you know, many people develop the capacity through their meditation practice or daily life practice with their breath to calm themselves, right? So it's a, it becomes a technique. I breathe, yeah, breathing in, let me calm myself. Calm myself down. Right? And so that's, it's good to have that too. We can calm ourselves, we can stabilize ourselves. But what's the problem with that? You know, 10 minutes later, we're agitated again. So we're always kind of calming ourselves down. Buddhism wants to liberate us, wants to free us. How does it free us? That we had, so we stop agitating ourselves, right? See, we stop the torrent of agitation. We stop the torrent of affliction. We stop the torrent of delusion. You know, mindfulness and concentration will give us a break, right? You know, it's good to have a break. But by itself, the old stuff will just come up again. So there has to be a deeper understanding, right? Understanding of who and what we really are, of the fundamental truth of Buddhism. Everything's impermanent. Everything is arising according to conditions. You know, nothing is solid. Nothing stays the same. Pleasures of life are just transient. They have no substance. They have no permanence. So without this kind of understanding, right, we'll just endlessly get sucked back into it again, right? So there, so it is our wish that the suffering of beings will cease, my own suffering will cease, so understanding can arise in our hearts. And again, we can transcend the path of anxiety and sorrow, which is, you know, the whole path of that. So good. So those are just three little gathas that I'm sure you've all heard many times. So let's, this morning we did the morning chant, right? Cece very beautifully did the morning chant. So what is that morning chant? It goes, the Dharma body is bringing morning light. In concentration, our hearts are at peace. A half smile is born upon our lips. This is a new day. We vow to go through it in mindfulness. The sun of wisdom is now risen, shining in every direction. Noble Sangha, diligently bring your mind into meditation. Namo Shakyamunaye Buddhaya. So again, when we listen to this, we are receiving profound instructions. Profound instructions. The Dharma body is bringing morning light. Now we all know what the physical light is in the morning, right? It's the sun, right? So we might say, oh, the sun is bringing morning light, right? It's interesting. What do the birds do when there's morning light? They start singing. What do we do? Remember, what is it I got to do today, right? You see, or what was I upset about yesterday? Let me make sure I carry that over till today, you see? But the birds sing. Isn't that interesting? They know something special is going on. See, they don't have any memory. They're just present. It's like, wow, it's been dark, and now it's, we can see, right? So they're happy. So they sing. I invite all of us to start doing the same. So, the Dharma body is really our mind body, right? In Buddhism, there are we have our physical body, but we also have the mind body, which is the Dharma body, the radiant body, the revealed body of the Buddha, the sort of the various bodies of the Buddha mind. So What is this morning, this Dharma body? What is its morning light? It's the light of awareness, you see. It's the light of presence. Right? That's what, as soon as we open our eyes in the morning, we become aware. What? I'm aware. Wow. I'm aware. The Dharma body is lighting up this moment. So please, before you start filling up your pure Dharma body, mind, awareness with thoughts, what do I got to do today? It's like, stop. Be like the birds. Awareness has arisen in my mind. I'm aware. I'm aware of my body. I'm aware of my hands. I'm aware where I am. Right? I'm aware that I'm alive. You see? I'm aware. Before we fill up that awareness with stuff, you see. Right? Now I imagine, the birds got their thing to do, right? After they've been singing a while, I'm not a bird person, but I do appreciate their singing. I mean, so I don't know that much about their life, but I know, I watch the birds and they are very busy during the day, aren't they? Kind of gathering food and you know what I mean? But it's just interesting. They start out just singing. So we all have our things to do. The Dharma body is bringing morning light. In concentration, our hearts are at peace. Again, these are instructions. Oh, how do I maintain a peaceful mind, a peaceful heart? Well, I have to concentrate on something that creates the conditions for peace. Right? I mean, it's not just going to happen. So, and again, this is morning chant in the meditation hall. So I am now going to undertake concentration, and when I concentrate on whatever my meditative practice is, what meditative object is, my mind heart will be at peace. Why? Because I'm not focused on all the stuff that agitates me. I mean, agitation of mind does not just happen by itself. Right? In the same way, when you go to the beach, the gulf, the water is not agitated by itself. It takes what? Wind, currents, you know what I mean? There's something moving through it. Otherwise, it just rests, doesn't it? So our practice in the meditation hall is cultivating concentration so our heart mind can be at peace. A half smile is born upon our lips. This is kind of the mudra of the Plum Village Thich Nhat Hanh tradition. He was always a great encourager of people, putting on the half smile. Not a full smile. It's not a giggle. It's not a laugh. He would say the half smile of a Buddha. If you look at a well-made Buddha, they're not serious. It's a little bit of a half smile. It's a smile of a serene mind. Of a mind that's dwelling in well-being. A mind that knows everything in this moment is okay. Where whatever's going on around me, sitting here in concentration and awareness, I can smile. Whatever the external situation, this is a very great gift that we can give ourselves. And this is the gift of meditation. Meditation is inward, right? We're turning inward. We're cultivating our own minds to find that within our own minds, we have this deep place, this resource that can always support us in calmness and presence and awareness and open-heartedness. Therefore, we can smile. I have smile. It's not like somebody told us a joke. This is a new day. Oh, if we could only practice this one. Right? Every moment is fresh. Everything that has happened in the past is gone. It's only preserved in our memory, which is made up of thoughts and perceptions and images. It has no reality. The truth is, every day, every moment is new, fresh. So this gatha is reminding us to recognize that. You know, we say to ourselves, you know, that's what, you know, in the same way when we get up in the morning, we have a gatha that says, you know, this is a new day, 24 brand new hours. See that, you know, that cuts that mind that just wants to drag the past into this present moment, wants to drag the future into this moment, all our worries. You know, as I say, it's just kind of bizarre. We kind of wake up in the morning and then like, what am I supposed to be worried about today? You know, who am I angry at today? I mean, can I remember who was I angry yesterday? You know, what are my issues? You know, we kind of have to we reconstruct our personal drama. Rather than just going, this is a new day. Totally fresh. How do I want to be today? Not how was I yesterday or how have I been for the last 20 years. You see? It's like, how do I want to be today? That's living a life of conscious intention. This is a new day. This is a new moment. This is a new beginning. You know, if in our relationships, we carry so much stuff in our relationships, this is, it's always new, it's always fresh. Let it go, right? Don't hold on. We're always holding on to the past. You know, you and I got something to resolve. You know, people are. Well, you could go down that road, or you just go, just let it go. It's not important, it's just endless dramas, right? So many things we've held on to. And then we look back, we can't even remember them. Be free, let go. This is a new day. We vow to go through it mindfulness. This is, you know, this is my intention for today going forward. I'm going to be present. I'm going to be mindful. I'm going to be aware of what's going on within me and around me. But most important, I'm going to be mindful of how I want to live today. You see, that's really what this means. This is a brand new day. How do I want to live it? And I'm going to go through the day mindful of this intention of mine. How I want to show up today. How I want to relate to people today. How I want my mind to be today. You see? This is what I'm mindful of. This keeps me on track. My mindfulness keeps me on track. The Sun of Wisdom has now risen, shining in every direction. So the sun, which is the metaphor here, the sun shines, doesn't it? It shines on everyone and everything equally. That's the sun. And even if we can't see the sun because of clouds or because, you know, of rotation, but we know the sun is always there, isn't it? It's always there. It is the essence of our life. So this is the sun of wisdom, because see, now I'm cultivating mindfulness. I'm cultivating concentration. I'm doing something wise. In this moment, I'm cultivating wisdom, the sun of wisdom, the sun of insight, the sun of understanding. You know, it's our choice. Am I going to let it shine in every direction, you see? But we don't let it shine in every direction, do we? We parse it out. You know, we're only so, our ability to understand, to love, we parse it out. You know, I'll give it to this one, but only if they meet certain criteria, right? And if some point during the day they don't show up the way I want them to show up, screw it, I'm not going to be understanding. Right? I mean, we parse out our wisdom. We parse out our compassion. It's conditional. The sun is not conditional. The sun shines on flowers, the sun shines on weeds, right? It shines on green things, it shines on rocks, right? It shines its light on everything. It's unconditional, the sun. That's why it's a metaphor. Well, anyhow, we didn't get too far. I have a whole list here, but I just wanted to give you, maybe we can continue another time, but I just wanted to give you a sense to please, again, you know, we just become habituated and things just become part of the, you know, part of the ongoing drama of, you know, this is what people say in the meditation, we don't listen, but please listen. Every moment fresh, every moment alive, everything has meaning if we pay attention.